Hey, and welcome to your Friday postgame. I am your host, Malcolm Fleshner. With me, not as always, but as preferred, Steve-O and Dave Kohler, the three amigos, as Irma likes to call us. And we're coming to you from the lovely backdrop of what city?
Pittsburgh.
Which is known as, there are three rivers. Who knows the three rivers that...
I think I do.
Okay. I definitely used to.
The Allegheny, Ohio, and the Monongahela.
Correct.
What are the chances that Rick Strom knew that?
Steve is referring to...
tell the audience why I said that. Or Jason Rubin.
Yeah.
the same person?
A little game we played here at TYT a couple of years ago when I printed out a map of the United States that had all the states outlined but didn't have them identified. We handed these out to various members of the staff to see how many of the states they could identify. And the average was about like 35 or so.
It was a little bit higher than that. That's embarrassingly low. 35 is terrible.
There were people who got under 30, like
Rick Strom.
Actually, we've done it twice. He was at the first batch, and the second batch was Jason Rubin. But Dan Nakamura, Dan's full name? Well, you know, hey Dan.
Dan from the internet.
Evans Nakamura, right. Dan from the internet got them all right, and we're all very proud of him for that.
Sports
he was
people
an intern.
Should do better than average in that kind of thing. That's how a lot of little kids learn geography, what they find the teams in different cities.
AL West, so yeah. The Pittsburgh is also home to our web publishing team, and Aaron Wysocki, what is his title?
Commander of the Armies of the East.
Yeah, and so Pittsburgh is an important locale for TYT, although when was the last time you were there?
I was there in 2008, and it wasn't TYT related.
Okay.
Never been to Pittsburgh, ever. I've been promising Aaron and Chris and Jacob that we'd be out there. There's also Ernie and Michael.
Now it'll be Mike.
Yeah.
And it was the first or second radio affiliate that agreed to take on the Young Turks.
And it's the home of Cenk's favorite football team, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And I almost got beat up by cops in the parking lot outside a Grateful Dead show in Pittsburgh. Huh. So it was a lot of good memories,
All right, so moving on.
Yes. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the Friday Post game, we do a little differently here. We actually prepare stuff and various games. We got games coming up. We got other segments that we all enjoy. And because with Cenk and Anna and Hannah and Francis and Haas, they like to talk about their personal lives, and you find that interesting. That would not be remotely interesting for you with us because we don't, we're boring dads. And so we have to come up with something else. And the way we're going to start this week is with a little segment that now has its own intro called, I think it's called Annoying Feedback or something like that. I believe we have an intro, Irma, that you put together. Could you show that? Feedback. So that's this is great. Where Steve reads comments that you guys have left for us on the message board, postgame show on TYTnetwork.com. And he has a few. And so why don't we go to that, Steve? The first one.
All right.
I believe you have the graphic for the first one.
Okay. Let's do it. The first one is from Fisher Hunter Jr.
They should be in order. There it is.
There it is. The Main Crew Friday postgame has become one of my favorite shows. Always like weekly world news and totally true or totally bullshit. Thanks, guys, and hi, Steve. Hi, Tim.
You love the shout out.
Why did I say Tim? It's not Tim. Yeah. It's Fish Hunter Jr. Hi, Fish Hunter Jr. All right. So the second comment is.
You don't have anything to say about these? You're just going to read them.
I'm just to read. Well, that one. There's nothing more.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for enjoying it. The second one is from the.
The edges are no longer parallel.
Okay. All right. Malcolm, you're good. I love the Friday post game. My second favorite hour of the week. Aggressive Progressives claims a first spot, but this is quickly becoming a very close second. Weekly World News is very entertaining and informative. Love the show.
So this, the edges are no longer parallel. Has got to be a huge Steve-O fan because two shows that you appear on are 1 and 2.
Correct, but I believe this person is a big fan of Jimmy Dore and Malcolm Fleshner.
Oh well. I'm just a fill-in on Progressive. That's all I ever hope to be.
All right, so I like this next comment a lot. It's from Americanino. Okay, big fucking props to Malcolm for the fake answers he comes up with for Weekly World News. They are super, they're always super random and imaginative. Well played, sir. Well played. Okay, so this is, he or she is totally right.
And well
your fake answers are excellent.
Well
really
played.
Yeah.
Well played is a good double entendre.
It is. Yeah. It is. So I actually like your fake answers better than your better than the actual answer most of the time. And the way you can pick out or create these fake answers that really make me and Dave think, right? That's pretty good, and you do it pretty consistently. Answer D is usually stupid, but there's sometimes they're pretty funny.
Yeah, I try to add a little humor. Yeah. What I go for actually, and for those of you who haven't seen it, we got an episode of Weekly World News coming up, or that segment coming up, is sometimes the real answer is the most fantastical one, and the other fake answers are seemingly not that exciting, you know, that more plausible. And then other times the real answer is highly plausible, and the fake answers are crazy. But that's how I keep you on your toes.
How is it going to be today?
Well, I don't even remember. I usually come up with them the night before, so Wednesday night. By the way, we're recording this on Thursday, so that's why we don't know anything that happened in the world in the intervening day and a half since when you're going to be watching this potentially. It's usually late at night before I go to bed, so I'm half delirious from lack of sleep and exhaustion. So some of them, that may be why they don't make sense. It may help.
But you know what? Okay, so Malcolm is a very smart fella. Mm. He's a clever fella, very witty. Good writer, great syntax and timber to his voice. Mm. So you don't get enough credit. So I'm giving you credit
now
in front of our vast audience.
Yeah, all 19. Well, the 19, the proud 19, they know.
Yeah,
they appreciate it. All right, next one.
All right, so this next one's also good. It's from K O'Neill 89, millennial and fellow Cornell grad, here to show support for the Oxford comma. I admittedly get tripped up with some of the finer points of grammar, but I certainly hope society won't let the basics slip away. Cavemen got their points across too. When in doubt, consult with The Elements of Style. In a perfect world, that will be the book in every hotel room drawer. Hashtag make America literate again. See, Cornell people are so smart.
I got a couple of things to say about that one.
Go ahead, say it.
Well, first, did you see the discussion of the Oxford comma on the main show?
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, it was a disaster.
They didn't know what the hell they were talking about.
They didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And then they went to break and came back, and Anna had like examples, and they still fucked it up.
Oh my God, it's so embarrassing. Who was it, Anna and Cenk?
Anna and Cenk and maybe us, or somebody, there was somebody else. I think there were three of them there.
It could be Brett, because Brett went to Stanford, he's a smart guy.
No, it wasn't Brett. But it was a disaster. And Anna was trying to come up with examples, and then they actually came back.
Why did they talk about the Oxford comma?
It was a big story in the news about how it cost us. It was an illegal case, and it, due to the confusion over it.
Oh, right, in Maine or something. Yeah,
trucking loss in Maine.
But I don't understand what all the controversy about the Oxford comma is, because you shouldn't always use it, and you shouldn't never use it. There are sometimes when it's appropriate, and sometimes when it's better not to use it. And you just use it or don't use it as you see fit, and whether it's going to be.
I'm a big fan of it. I think it clarifies. I think you should almost always use it.
There are definitely instances, though. I mean, if you look it up, you go read the Wikipedia entry on Oxford comma. They'll show examples of times when using the Oxford comma makes things more complicated or muddies the waters, and times when not using it muddies the
waters.
You
must not use enough. The semicolon.
Semicolon's very effective.
They're very helpful. I like semicolons.
I could have used a semicolon in one of the upcoming.
Is that going to be in the graphic? No. Maybe.
Totally true or totally bullshit. And then the other. What was the other? There was something else. Can you? Let me see. What was this?
Elements of Style.
Oh, the Elements of Style. What I wanted to say about that that's interesting is that.
Who wrote Elements of Style?
It's Strunk and White. But
of course you
would. E.B. White, who wrote Charlotte's Web, and then his, I think his, one of his professors, his literature professors at Princeton or something like that. The Elements of Style has, I have some issues with the Elements of Style, so it's not perfect. It's better than nothing. But the funny thing is you mentioned it should be in hospitals, in hotels instead of
the Bibles.
And I heard, this is a long time ago, I don't remember the details, but I heard that one hotel chain thought, you know what, we're going to mix it up. The Bible, we're not going to put the Bible in all hotels or all of our rooms. We're going to put dictionaries in there because that'll be more, you know, people maybe will be using it. And what happened was.
The dictionary got stolen.
The dictionaries got stolen. Yeah,
of course, I was thinking I would probably take it as a helpful dictionary.
Right.
Nobody wants the Bible.
Right. And so that's, if you put the Elements of Style in people's hotel rooms, they're going to take them. So.
No, I disagree. I think that people would just leave them. Few people would take them though. Yeah.
Yeah, I think people
but
would
most people
them.
Would just leave them. But, yeah. But the dictionary.
I'm not saying everybody stole the dictionaries either, but anything but the Bible, which really, I think that is something of an indictment of the Bible. People don't want it. All right, next. What's next?
All right, next. We have a lot of.
Yeah, you had there are seven you
Rob Guy Day writes, I think Jordan would do a better job. This is in regards to who gets to go to cover the refugees. As I think he has a TYT brand that others don't. That trip is pretty important, and I think it's got to be with people who are TYT branded. I would actually pick Haas as well if he could speak the language because it would lower barriers. I really enjoyed Steve and Dave. They feel like the old men of the sea to me, old and grizzled TYT veterans.
Now, when he says I would pick Haas as well because if he spoke the language, is he talking about English?
That's what I had the same thought. Okay. Haas' English is pretty good. His Turkish, I think, is not as good, and I don't think he speaks that much Arabic at all. So, anyway, for those who don't know, the winner of
we have
the
a
refugee,
winner. It's a big announcement.
This is a big announcement. Yeah. So, the winner of the refugee sweepstakes, this is where you get to go to the refugee camps and cover them, is. Is there a drum roll or some kind of sound effect? Francis Maxwell. Okay. And the way I left it is I let the folks over at YouTube choose because I didn't want to choose. But I kind of did choose because I pitched it in a certain way. And look, Francis's pitch was the best. He said he's going to go to, you know, one of these refugee camps and play soccer with the kids and, you know, bring at least for a brief moment joy and happiness and, you know, that common bond through sports and sportsmanship and competition. And of course, the YouTube people love that. Visual of this YouTuber in a refugee camp playing soccer is great. It's much better than, you know, people talking to him. And that's not as fun. And what they didn't want is they didn't want like a straight up BBC type of coverage. Oh, this is a refugee camp. You know, there's 8,000 people here. And yesterday, 400 more came over from the border. Like, they don't want that coverage. They want something where it's uniquely YouTube-ish. So Francis will be going to Uganda. To a camp there, and I think there are people pouring in from, is it Sudan? There are a lot of refugees coming in from across the border, and it's really interesting because it doesn't get any press coverage.
There's Somalian refugees in? No, it's probably Sudan.
I think it's Sudan, maybe Somalia, I forget. But the point is, apparently Uganda, which is not nearly as wealthy as the United States, they both start with a U though. They are very receptive to the refugees, and they try their best to take care of them. They're much more open-minded than we are. Perhaps it's because they share a border, and perhaps because they have a common history or whatever it may be. But that's kind of cool. So he's going to be there for 5 days. I'm sorry, 3 days. The whole trip is 5 days if you take into account the 22-hour flight. Mm-hmm. So he's a fly through Abu Dhabi. He has to take a battery of vaccines.
Yeah, he's already gotten a bunch of shots. By the way, now's he got the yellow fever, which is brutal. So now, if you want to give him a punch in the arm, today's the day to do it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a very costly trip. And YouTube is very generous in supporting Francis to go there. And of course, YouTube's doing it for their own benefit too, that they get good PR out of it. But I do think it's great when companies step up and try to help out, even in small ways.
I look forward to it. It's going to be very exciting. I know that it's great that they all really wanted to go so much. Because I know that if like I got this assigned to me, I would on the one hand be excited about it, but I'd also be like, oh Jesus, all those shots and all that travel. Oh, I'm such an old man. I'm one of those old men in the city.
No, you're not, because he didn't say he really enjoys you. He said he really enjoys Steve and Dave. Right, Dave?
Right. Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah.
Just Steve and
thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. So Rob Guy Day doesn't enjoy you much at all.
Well.
Thanks, Rob. But back to Francis for a second. He's Scottish.
Mm.
Remember that movie, The Last King of Scotland, with Forrest Whitaker?
No.
Set in Uganda, about Idi Amin.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Mm. So I think Francis will be literally the whitest person in Uganda, because
he's the whitest person anywhere he goes.
He's very white, yeah. So hopefully he enjoys it and comes back with some great stories.
All right, what's next? How many we got to two more?
We're done soon.
Three more?
All right, two more.
Two more.
Okay. All right, Jonathan Mickles? I used to skip the Friday post game nearly every week. If only because the power panel skipped it and I didn't feel like it lived up to the main show. Steve, Malcolm, and Dave have turned it into a real show. I love this. The games especially. Great stuff. So, you know what I did? I guess I picked a lot of comments that were complimentary.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Well, I mean,
thanks, Jonathan,
for enjoying it. The people commenting on the Friday post game tend to be, they're not a whole lot of, you guys suck and I hate you and go away and die in a house fire.
Someone did leave me a comment saying that I'm an asshole for saying that refugee camps are not safe,
right,
because apparently this person took it as me being anti-refugee, which is completely not true. My point was, it's unsafe to go there because it's a long flight. There's diseases that you might catch, which is the reason why to get all these vaccines. Something can go wrong. Plus, these refugee camps are attacked all the time, you know, with other people coming in. There's instability by its very definition. So it's not the refugees that I think are unsafe, it's the camps that are unsafe. Anyway, the last one.
Last one.
Tom Megalodon says, outstanding show. The grammar and syntax are bound to change. What will endure is a tendency to judge other people for not following the rules. 20 or 30 years ago, who would have thought that we would rely so much on text, email, and social media posts for personal and professional communication, and that so much would depend on how a person presents himself or herself or themselves in writing. So that's a good point. You know, we're a little bit judgy here, especially me and Malcolm, about people's grammar and their inability to identify all 50 states, you know, just basic, what we think are basic knowledge to living in our society.
He's talking about how we're sticklers about grammar, and he says, especially me and Malcolm.
Well, spoken language is not nearly as bad as the written language.
The spoken language has some problems too.
Yeah.
But the point that people are going to complain is true and has been true throughout time, you know, time immemorial. You go back to the 19th century, and I mean, Noah Webster, he created his English dictionary partially because he was so pissed off at the way Americans spoke, wanted to, you know, clarify how we're supposed to. I mean, that's what dictionaries are. It's, listen, these are, you know, this, I'm going to say how everyone's supposed to do these things, and these are the rules now, according to me. And then the rules change and they complain about it, but it's been happening since, you know, since the language began, and it will continue to happen. But languages are not, there are no hard and fast rules to language. There's no governing body that says, no, you can't say it like that. It's just what we collectively agree to. I mean, like, what do you guys do about words where if you know the correct pronunciation of a word, but most people don't pronounce that word correctly, do you use the pronunciation that is commonplace, or do you use the correct one?
Depends on the circumstance.
Like forte, and you say it's not his strong suit. Forte. How do you pronounce that?
That is his forte.
I almost always say
forte.
No, the way you're supposed to, even if it makes me sound like a dweeb or a.
The correct pronunciation is fort.
Okay, yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah. Because it comes from the French, maybe it comes from the Italian. It's either from the Italian or the French, but I guess it would be French. But so that's one. I just don't even say it because I don't want to say it wrong. But if you say it correctly, people are like, oh, he doesn't know it's forte when it's not. Or another one is FLACCID, where, you know, we were talking.
I'm sorry.
FLACCID.
I never need to use that word. Does that controversy have that over flaccid?
See, the correct pronunciation is flaccid, but it's falling out of favor. And so eventually, 20 years, you know, or 100 years from now, no one will say flaccid. But some people still, they know in English, if you have the two C's together, you know, with a vowel before or whatever it is, the rule is that it makes the KS sound, like in the word access, you know. And so they think flaccid should follow that, or flaccid. But people generally, you know, have moved away from that. And if you continue to pronounce it correctly, you'll be left by yourself. Anyway, I find it an interesting conundrum.
But there's a deeper meaning to this. A lot of these grammatical rules, and all throughout history, the people in power and the elites make up rules that are hard to follow to shut other people out of their exclusivity.
Well, yeah,
it happens in the religions, of course.
Yes,
and if you read Michael Parenti's Assassination of Julius Caesar, he says all of the Latin scholars, the Roman scholars, they created such a convoluted way of writing Latin so that they could just propagate the history among their own little exclusive club and leave the people out of it.
Yeah, well, but even the ability to read was limited
to just
you know, clerics and the elites, and so it was people
were excluded. Were not allowed to learn
right.
How to read.
Well, that's true also.
So if you want to break down the barriers of grammar so to make the world a more democratic place, then that's
well, the reality is that the elites don't control it. You can't tell people how to speak because, believe me, I do around here frequently, and people don't listen to me. So, but yeah, people are going to speak the way they're going to speak, and there's virtually nothing you can do to stop them.
Right, so. But if you're hiring and you're at some white shoe law firm and two perfectly qualified candidates come in and you want to kick one out,
you can say, oh, he doesn't follow the proper grammar.
Or right, or
well,
if
nobody does that. You pick the one that you like better.
Anyway, yeah.
The one that went to the Cornell.
No, I don't care about the Cornell part, but the person that I would rather have lunch with.
Spelling be damned.
Vegetarian, you're out. Just kidding. No offense to vegetarians.
Wait, didn't you stop eating?
I couldn't stop. I greatly reduced my intake of red meat, but I still eat it.
All right. Well, that's enough for annoying feedback.
Yes.
Let's move on to Dave has an obituary for us.
A story about an obituary. First, I want to comment that you're wearing the same clothes you wore in the most recent TYT Classics.
Really? Am I?
Yeah.
It was so long ago. I don't even remember.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Huh. I wasn't there for it. I missed it.
So this is a non-obituary obituary. I was reading the New York Times looking for the obituaries, and there's one, the passing of Malcolm Toon. So did you get a graphic?
Yes, we have an image of Malcolm Toon. There he is.
He passed away in his early 90s. He was a very prominent diplomat in the 60s, 70s, and the height of his career was ambassador to the Soviet Union at the height of the Cold War in the 70s. So he was very prominent, very important. He left public life about 30 years ago. And turns out, so there was an obituary written about him a couple days ago in the New York Times, but he died 8 years ago.
Wow.
And so he died 8 years ago. It was mentioned here and there in some diplomatic, trade magazines, and some people knew about it. The local paper had something about it. But the New York Times, kind of whining and complaining, said no one ever told them. The State Department didn't call them. They didn't know about it. And here's the most interesting part, and this answers once and for all the question that we've had on this segment. The New York Times says they prepared his obituary 3 years ago.
Awesome.
First of all, he died 8 years ago. They didn't know. 5 years later, they wrote his obituary, and 3 years after that, they published it.
I'm not saying he's an obscure figure, but they have to have obituaries on a lot of people prepared.
If they got this guy.
Yeah, because they're going, these are deep album cuts.
Right. So I thought that was interesting. And we just talked about it last week, Bart and I did, when you guys weren't here. So
no,
that answers the question.
Postgame, that was one of the things you talked about in your postgame. Right. And somebody commented in the comments, told you, direct you to an article about it, I think, did you read the comments?
I did, but I didn't see that. Maybe I read them.
I think so. Yeah, okay. What I think is interesting about that is it's sort of a large scale, something that happens to you personally when, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I'll go away for a week on vacation. I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to tune out. I'm not going to read the news. I'm not going to pay attention. And then some celebrity will die during that period. And it's a big deal for a couple of days. Don Rickles is dead. Oh, too bad. We miss him. RIP Don Rickles and on Twitter and everything. And then you come back and you missed it. But by the time you come back, nobody's talking about it anymore. And then 3 years later, you'll be watching the Oscars maybe that, and then they'll do the commemorative. You're like, oh, Paul Newman died. What the fuck? Nobody told me.
it's a small scale version.
Because most of the news that you miss, you're never going to hear about again. It doesn't matter, or you can catch up with it when they update. Mm-hmm. But they don't update you on Don Rickles' death,
right?
Except on Saturday Night Live about Generalissimo Franco. They used to do that, but that's a dated reference.
So that's really the only obit I have for this week.
All right. Well, then let's move on and to the fastest growing game that's sweeping the nation: Weekly World News. Weekly World News. All right, Weekly World News. How do we play? Well, I collect stories from around the globe, and then I pose them as questions to Dave and Steve for them to figure out which is the real story from that country and which one's the fake. Well, just which one's the real one is what we're looking for. And so for the first story, we go to Libya. And that's where Libya is.
Libya. Can you repeat the question again?
That's a Herman Cain reference. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. So the question is, recent high-level negotiations in Libya suggest an agreement may soon be reached on what? Is it A, elections to be scheduled in the next 6 months? Well. Well, we'll go through the motions anyway. A, elections to be scheduled in the next 6 months. B, plans for resettling hundreds of thousands of refugees in northern Africa. Or C, Libyan recognition of the State of Israel. Or D, the correct spelling of former President Muammar Gaddafi's last name. What do you think, guys?
I would not have guessed C. They're not going to recognize
I was going to guess A anyway.
So it was between A and B.
It's true.
We have two guesses of A. Wouldn't it be funny if I pulled a fast one and had Irma do that and it wasn't A? What is the correct answer, Irma? It's A, elections to be scheduled in the next 6 months. All right, so what's the deal with this story?
Why the music? We got it right.
No, that music was for Irma.
Yeah. You guys each have one right. Irma has one wrong. All right, so the crazy thing about Libya is it was a huge deal. Are we going to go to war in Libya? Are we going to lead from behind and all this stuff? And we overthrow Gaddafi. And do you ever hear, and then all the Benghazi stuff, do you ever hear anything about Libya in the news?
No, and that's one of the things that drives me crazy. We have all these wars, and we're always told, safety, safety. We're going to fight them over there, so we don't fight them over here.
Very important.
It's an existential threat. We have to do all these things. I can't believe, he would gas his own people, blah, blah, blah. We drop bombs. We kill a lot of people. We spend a ton of our money and resources. And then we're like, God, yeah, that, we don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're finish done. That.
Whatever.
Okay, so
it's like a Don Rickles obituary. We just move right on. We don't care.
So what's going on in Libya right now is most of the country is controlled by two separate factions. The leaders are Fayez al-Sarraj and Khalifa Haftar. I believe we have photos of them. On the left is Fayez al-Sarraj and right is Khalifa Haftar.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. So Haftar on the right there, he controls 2/3 of Libya, whereas al-Sarraj controls the capital and surrounding areas. And he runs the UN-backed government. He heads the UN-backed government. So they've been having talks recently, which were coordinated by Egyptian president dictator Sisi, al-Sisi, and in the United Arab Emirates. And apparently there is some hope that this war-torn country can coalesce and come together and hold elections in 6 months. The country has been racked by internal divisions since Gaddafi was ousted in 2011. The economy has collapsed. Oil production is way down. There's a political vacuum and there's human trafficking with the mass deaths of refugees who come through. It's a mess. And so there are unconfirmed reports suggesting that elections are going to be held in 6 months. And there's various, they're hashing out how that's going to work and who's going to be eligible and that sort of thing. But some of the areas that they're working through are identifying terrorist groups to exclude them from the political process and disbanding militias. And an end to foreign interference in army and security affairs because weapons have been pouring into the country from other foreign powers ever since Gaddafi fell. And what I find interesting is this is potentially good news, but then there are other skeptics in this article who are like, this is never going to happen. Even if they hold these elections, they're not going to, because somebody's going to have to give up power. And it's specifically Mattia Towaldo, a Libyan expert at the European Council of Foreign Relations, said this is what Egypt wants, but nobody in Libya is going to buy this. And if I can quote him, he says, or she says, if he does win those elections, meaning talking about Haftar, he would be able to say he has a new legitimate right to get back into Tripoli, the capital. But it is very doubtful it would be possible to run free and fair elections. And it is not clear why Sarraj or the Islamist militias in Benghazi that have been supporting him would agree to this process, since he is quite likely to lose or find themselves designated as terrorist groups. So it's one of those stories where it sounds like good news, but it might just be we're blowing smoke up our asses in believing that this is gonna happen. And this is the kind of reason why coups occur and why military solutions are often the only ones that are on the table, because people can't come together and potentially give up cede power.
But I'm sure if we bomb them some more, it'd be all better.
I mean, I don't know. Like, it's the same deal with Syria. We have these talks of, well, is Assad going? Can he be a part of whatever the future of Syria is? And it's like, who are we talking about this? That's up to him. Unless he is defeated militarily and driven out, like Saddam, he's not going anywhere. He's not going to agree to leave. I mean, and so why we even discuss that as a possibility? Because we have to, but it's all about domestic politics, international politics, and has nothing to do with the reality of Syria. So, I don't know. What do you what are your thoughts on Libya, Dave? You think there's hope for Libya, or is it just a mess that is you're going to take generations to?
Yeah, a mess that'll take generations. On the election thing, same thing happened in Iraq. The first election they had after the war. All the conservatives and the Bush administration said, "Yeah, see, we told you that
the purple fingers, right?
Stained fingers. We told you we could do elections."
Yeah.
And I said, "No, that's not the point. Yeah, you could do an election, but you didn't create a tolerant, stable democracy."
Yeah.
And we still know that today. The government that was elected oppressed 2/3.
Dave,
of the
that is such a pre-9/11 mindset. Whatever that means.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what was the name of the official who was like the governor general that we sent over.
Paul Bremer.
Yeah, Paul Bremer. You're saying Paul Bremer wasn't Iraq's Thomas Jefferson?
No. But Libya doesn't need to be a country. No one lives there. It's not important. They do have some oil, like all those nations do, unfortunately. But it could be a tribal for the next generation or two. It's not a problem.
Right, but except for that the human trafficking and, when a country like that descends, if the country is somewhere in the middle of, you know, the Sahara and there's nothing there, no resources, and the nomads are, you know, allowed to, you know, roam as much as they want and do their thing because there's nothing that anybody wants there, that's fine. But Libya has too much that other people want.
Right.
So.
It's strategic.
But, you know, let's think positive thoughts for Libya and hopefully they have a political solution and can end the bloodshed and, you know, move that country forward. Because any talk, you're right, Steve, of American or Western intervention, military intervention, if we can't look at Libya and look at Iraq and look at our track record and say we can't keep doing this. This is outrageous that even we consider it.
Yeah. So here's what we have to stop pretending. We have to stop pretending that we can create these nation states that look just like us. Okay, and that they will look just like us very quickly. Because you have one of two situations in these areas where you have either no nation state and it's just different warlords and small factions and they do what they do and there's often atrocities being perpetrated from one group against another, or you create a nation state under a strongman who becomes a dictator who brutalizes people. Now, to get that process to where we are today, I mean, it's not an easy process. And no amount of bombs can make that process faster. So I understand that there are bad things happening in the world, and I would like to help them in some humanitarian way. What I don't like is the way we pretend that we're helping them through more military action.
Yeah.
So
I mean, the idea that we can bomb them into democracy is so
absurd.
Why that idea has not been... that we even entertain that notion is outrageous. So, all right, well, let's move on. We're going to go to Brazil, I believe, for our next story. Where is Brazil? There it is. It's got the equator going through it, South America. And the question is as follows. After a recent outbreak of yellow fever, the Brazilian government asked citizens to stop doing what? Was it A, having sex outdoors, B, washing their cars, C, killing monkeys, or D, sending love letters to Steve-O?
It should have been, the D answer should have been hanging out with Francis Maxwell. He just got a shot for yellow fever.
That's true, but when we were discussing yellow fever the other day, you took offense and implied that it was about sexual attraction to Asians.
I didn't take offense. That's a bit of an overstatement. Okay.
Well, you jokingly took offense. All right, you can come back to that. You can come back to that, Irma. All right, so what are our answers? What do we think this might be? This is an excellent question. So we got one answer of B and one answer of C. What is the correct answer, Irma? The correct answer is... C, killing monkeys.
So obvious, Dave.
All right, so this is the...
Let's keep this up to remind everyone that I got the answer right.
Congratulations.
I'm on a super hot streak, by the way.
That's true. Yeah, you deserve credit for that. So I'm not sure if you deserve credit for the first one there. But this is the most depressing story of the five today, I will promise you. So yellow fever is spreading in Brazil for the first time since the last time they had a yellow fever epidemic was in the 1940s. And health officials in Brazil are telling people, don't kill monkeys. Because apparently people are killing monkeys. The authorities have found monkeys dead with fractured skulls. Another was found that had been burned to death. Because people are panicking and freaking out about getting yellow fever. But guess what? People don't get yellow fever from monkeys. They get it from mosquitoes. They get it from mosquitoes. But monkeys also get yellow fever from mosquitoes. Mm. And so in addition to the fact that I guess 240 people have died from yellow fever in Brazil, which is, considering it had been virtually eradicated, pretty serious. But far more monkeys have died from yellow fever, 4,400 or so. So the monkeys are dying there. This is an example of the golden lion tamarin, which is potentially going to go extinct, or it's on the brink of extinction, and this is not helping. Brazil also has the richest primate diversity in the world. But this is like a triple whammy. So it's not the monkeys are being killed by the yellow fever, which is terrible. Then other monkeys who don't have yellow fever are being killed by people who are afraid of getting yellow fever from the monkeys. And the third, the triple whammy, is that the health officials monitor the monkeys. And when the monkeys get yellow fever in a certain area, that's an indication that yellow fever has come there. And so they need to inoculate people. So by killing the monkeys, they're also killing the messenger. So it's triple bad. And it's devastating. So the yellow fever has normally been found in parts of the Amazon River Basin, but it's spread to the more populous regions, the cities. And so people are hunting on the monkeys with rifles and clubs, even though, as I said, the monkeys don't transmit it to humans. But the other thing I found out about yellow fever, it's often asymptomatic in humans, but patients who develop severe symptoms can die within 7 to 10 days. So you get yellow fever, either you never even know you had it or you're dead. It's like those are your two options potentially. I think they
it's like totally true or totally bullshit.
Yeah, it's,
there's no nuance.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow, it's terrible. Yeah,
this is a polarized affliction. So 4,400 have died, and they're worried that it's going to spread to the cities. It's spread by the same kind of mosquito that spreads Zika and dengue fever. And then the other thing is that they're also worried that, or another thing I found interesting is that. The people of Brazil have been very critical of the government being too slow to act. And the Brazil's health minister, Ricardo Barros, admitted that their people are right. And one thing I wonder, which is not addressed in this article, is whether the new government in Brazil, which is run by a bunch of corrupt kleptocrats, pays short shrift to funding the health ministry, and if there's a direct result of that. But the other additional, like 18th piece of bad news from this story is that one of the factors that they feel are contributing to yellow fever, the yellow fever outbreak, are deforestation and climate change. So that's yet another notch in, check mark for why climate change is destroying us in ways that we hadn't anticipated. And there's even concern that it will get to Puerto Rico and from there to the United States. And so I'll leave you in this depressing story with a quote from Karen Stryer, an anthropologist at the University of Wisconsin who has studied monkeys in the Atlantic Forest in Brazil since the 1980s, who said she has never seen monkeys die from disease in such high numbers. She described a sense of emptiness in a reserve near Caratinga in Minas Gerais state, where howler monkeys have largely vanished.
That's sad.
That's really sad. And you're right. Super depressing. Can you get vaccinated against this?
Yes, and that's, I didn't get into that. That's part of the story, is that they're critical of the government for being too slow to vaccinate people. And
can you vaccinate monkeys too?
I don't know about vaccinating monkeys, but that's what, Francis just got the yellow fever vaccination. But the other governments are pouring in, but they're the people of these parts of Brazil where it's become prevalent are saying, you should have known it was here and should have been inoculating us ahead of time. Like this one woman was quoted, whose brother, she's like, he shouldn't have died. You should have come and given vaccinations to everybody and he would still be alive. So it's understandable why people are frustrated.
So that again, I'm with the people, but this is why you need good government. You can't have a shitty government that's improperly funded, that can't or won't do these proactive things. And
yeah,
this is what we need government for. And it's very easy to criticize government for their inefficiencies and all of that, but we need government because we can't individually fight against these things. I mean, it's great to be an individual if you have a shotgun, you're living on the frontier, but we live in a very connected world. We need cooperation, not just from our own government, but from the international community, because these massive, devastating things like, climate change and disease, we need cooperation across borders. You think a wall will help against yellow fever and climate change? It won't, obviously, right? Like we need to have good government that's cooperating with other good governments.
It's also a question of, like, if you're an Ayn Rand aficionado or libertarian, what is the libertarian solution to a pandemic? What corporate best interest is it to go out and inoculate people libertarian strain of thinking, and I apologize if I'm getting inaccurate here, is that, well, once it kills off a bunch of people, then you'll know not to do that again. Or those, anybody it doesn't kill, their lesson will be learned.
Yeah, survival of the fittest. So, when, we have 7 billion people on Earth and 5 billion die, we have 2 billion left, they'll figure it out. They've been fine.
All right, so the rest of the stories are not as depressing as that one.
Are there any other countries in the world that are crossed by the equator and a tropical line like Brazil is?
Well, is Brazil, can we see that map again, Irma? This is a critical question.
It's there in the background.
Well, but
just ask Jason Rubin.
No, no. Which what is
tropical,
the
tropical Capricorn? The little dotted line.
Oh, but it's not going through Brazil.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Oh yeah, okay. It is. I see. So, is there a country in essentially Africa, I guess, that would be as north, south?
Be very long north south.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
That's take that to your cocktail party this weekend.
People will be so impressed by that.
I should have maps that have other. Usually I try to find maps that just have that country highlighted, but this one has additional information that we can riff on. All right, so the next story comes to us from Tanzania. Who knows where Tanzania is? Anybody? There it is. We've covered Tanzania before, but this story is different. What is today's story? And the question is this: 9,900 Tanzanian civil servants were recently dismissed from their posts for what? Was it A, taking bribes from Chinese mining interests? B, misrepresenting their academic credentials? C, failing unscheduled spot drug tests? Or D, participating in that stupid 10 concerts Facebook meme? You can come back to us, Irma.
What's the second answer?
The second answer was misrepresenting their academic credentials. That was the B answer. All right, do we have our answers? We have, we both say A. Irma, what is the correct answer A? No, it is B.
Damn it.
Misrepresenting their academic credentials.
What academic credentials? I should have gone with my gut instinct, because that's why I asked which one was B again. Because it wasn't even the answer, it was the letter.
Yeah.
We did A, C, I was like, just let me B this time. That's what I was thinking. Damn it.
You don't overthink it. Don't overthink it, but also don't underthink it. You have to find though just the right level of thinking it. Okay, so where is this story? I got this story somewhere. I gotta find this story. Do I have it? I have it somewhere here, I think. Yeah, I seem to have lost the story. I may have left this one behind. No, there it is. Tanzania dismisses 9,900 civil servants over forged college certificates. The president of Tanzania, John Magufuli, I believe we have an image of him. There he is. I love this photo because he's so happy and the woman behind him is so happy. And then the other guy is like, what are you looking at, motherfucker?
He's secured.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not smiling. I'm not happy about seeing you. So last year, Tanzania's president, I've talked about before, who seems like a really bright spot in Africa, which is why I'm surprised he has not been assassinated yet. He ordered the purge of more than 19,000 ghost workers from the public sector payroll. So there were 19,700 people who were getting paid by the Tanzanian government who didn't exist. And now he's dismissed more than 9,900 civil servants after a nationwide verification of academic credentials uncovered workers with forged school and college certificates. So this was clearly widespread. And that included several senior officials, including the head of the government's anti-corruption body, which is always amusing, the tax chief, a senior rail official, and head of the port authority as part of a wider anti-corruption drive. And so the government, because of the ghost workers, was losing, according to this, 82 million pounds a year, and they're spending more than 200 million pounds a month to pay civil servants' salaries, but suggestion is though those figures were bloated, and these people did not deserve their salaries. There are 550,000 civil servants at national and local levels in Tanzania, which I don't know what the entire population of Tanzania is, but it seems like a lot. But he went on, he said he ordered officials to name and shame by publishing a list of all the civil servants with the forged academic qualifications. So, I think the kind of thing that's probably widespread in third world countries, and it's a means of patronage and corruption, where you pay people off who don't have jobs, or you.
That doesn't happen here in the U.S. though.
Well, I mean, we have just a different form of corruption. It's there's more money involved, and it's at fewer people. But Tanzania seems to be a positive story with this guy John Magufuli, and there's hope that he is. Because there's consequences to doing this. Now he's got 9,900 people who are pissed off at him.
What's his name again?
John Magufuli. And so that's the story out of Tanzania. And if you're a civil servant in Tanzania, it's like being a college football head coach here. This is an epidemic of saying you have, you know. Don't.
You know, there's an old saying in Tanzania, it goes something like this. Make you fool me once, shame on you. Make you fool me twice, well, you can't get make you fool me twice again.
That's awesome. I miss George Bush. So, but that's, isn't that the kind of thing that happens a lot? You know, the head coach of Iowa State University or something will reveal that he doesn't have a PhD in phys ed or something, so he has to quit. And
you know what's shocking is that actually happens in the legal profession. You know, I've had this happen, not to me obviously, but in my job places in the past. Like, you figure people aren't going to commit resume fraud, but it happens more often than you would think.
Like, what are you talking about resume? Well, like, what specifically? What kind of resume fraud?
So, for example, they just lie about their law school they went to. Just make it up.
So they didn't get a law degree, or
they might have gotten a degree from some other lesser school, but did they just put down Harvard, for example? Well, not Harvard, but something else.
Right.
Or more frequently, they don't quite graduate. They went there for like a year or two, then they leave, or they never passed the bar, and they just say they did. I mean, but they always get found out.
Yeah.
This is crazy, but they get away with it for some short period of time.
Yeah, but a long time ago, I was on The Point with Anna when she was hosting, and the guest didn't show up, so I had to be honest. And one of the questions was about personal ads and people who say, you know, in your personal ad or your profile on Match.com, whatever, that you're 50 pounds lighter than you are, or that you're, or you use a photo of somebody who's not you.
Yeah, like, or you from like 27 years ago.
Right, like what's the long-term thinking here? You got to show up eventually. Yeah. I mean, like, well, we'll go someplace where the lighting isn't very good, or I mean.
Well, then you win her over with your sense of humor, and it doesn't matter all the other stuff.
Yeah, well, sure, that works for me, but most people can't get away with that, Dave. I just bring in what Steve said about me earlier. I'm highly recommended by Steve-O, as well as 19 viewers of the Friday Post Game.
There's more than 19. Hertz. We're up to like 37.
But they're only proud 19. Right. The other 18 are just like they're.
I'd like
to
see some examples of the Tanzanian fake resumes. Like, what schools did they?
Well, apparently a lot of them, I can send you the link to the article, a lot of them had actually the same exact credentials. So somebody was was selling, you know, 1,500 people had the same exact credentials, you know.
That's awesome.
So that's funny. All right, so let's move on. We got two more to go. Next, we're going to Mexico. We all know where Mexico is.
Dave's going to get this one right.
Dave is going to nail it. Okay, what's the question for Mexico, Irma? Mexican authorities revealed that they have been unable to find what? Is it A, any of El Chapo's ill-gotten drug money? B, the gravesite of the nation's second president, Vicente Guerrero? C, a bus carrying 23 people that disappeared from a remote part of Chiapas? Or D, any indication from Donald Trump about how our ass tastes after he failed to get funding for his border wall in the recent budget deal? That's a long D answer, I admit that.
Yeah,
it's a little,
it could have been better.
Could have been better.
Yeah. Oh, I like the Mexican music though.
All right, so we got an answer of A from Steve and B from Dave. What is the correct answer, Irma? The correct answer is A. Any of El Chapo's ill-gotten drug money? We're tied.
Slump with this.
We're tied. Yeah.
No, we're not tied. I haven't gotten any right.
You got the first one right, didn't you?
Yeah, but so did Steve.
Yeah.
And that one didn't count. Oh,
okay. Well, either way, take credit where you can get it, Dave. This game is, you know, it's very loose. It's like credentials for a civil servant in Tanzania. Nobody checks anything around here. All right, so what's the story? This is a interesting and amusing story also. So these are U.S. authorities investigating Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, have not been able to trace a single dollar of his ill-gotten gains. There he is, there's El Chapo. So he is reputed to have built up a fortune worth $1 billion, but they haven't found any of it. And because his money is not, he didn't use the financial system, is what the reasoning. He was captured for the third time in January 2016 and extradited a year later.
Well, he put it onto HSBC and they just laundered it for him, so they can't find it.
Either that or, you know, maybe he's got it all in Bitcoin. So I didn't know this, but recently Damaso Lopez, Guzman's former right-hand man, was captured, and he was apparently trying to take over control of El Chapo's criminal empire. But in point of this story, in 2009, I didn't know this either, Forbes magazine infuriated then-President Felipe Calderon when it included Guzman on its list of the world's richest people with an estimated net worth of $1 billion. I think it was infuriating probably also to El Chapo because he didn't want to be associated with actual criminals like those guys. He considered himself an honest man. And this other piece of the story that I didn't know, Ted Cruz introduced the El Chapo Act, which was intended to use the $14 billion they were looking for that El Chapo allegedly had, according to the United States, had acquired in various assets to construct Trump's proposed border wall. So Ted Cruz is going to take El Chapo's money and construct the border wall with it.
That's
which
not bad.
Prompted indignation in Mexico, whose government has repeatedly denied that it will fund the wall. Like, not even our drug traffickers are going to fund your fucking wall. But some people, a lot of analysts, suspect that Guzman, who always claimed or once claimed, "I'm just a farmer," didn't actually have that much money. He didn't, you know, that he certainly does not have $14 billion, which is what the U.S. claims in terms of his whole empire. And he doesn't have, but they're saying he probably doesn't even have the $1 billion that others claim. But right now there is a bitter fight going on to see who's going to take over control of his empire. The other thing I found interesting about the story is that he is from a part of Mexico called Culiacan, right? And that's the hub of the Sinaloa cartel. And this is a relatively small town in rural Mexico, but it boasts a series of luxury shops and high-end auto dealerships, including Jaguar and Hummer, that are seldom seen in provincial Mexican cities. And so this is the quote that I got that I thought I'd share. "There's an unknown amount of drug money circulating that is noticed, but can't be measured," said Adrian Lopez, director of the Sinaloa newspaper Noroeste. "Culiacan started having services and luxury products when it was still a relatively small city, with Lamborghinis in the streets as if it were Rodeo Drive." Which, I don't know, I mean, I'm torn on El Chapo because on the one hand, I find all this very comical. And it's, you know, he's sort of this roguish figure who, 4 minutes, what, that's an outrage. He's this roguish figure who beat the system and he escaped from prison. And that, you know, that there's a certain mystique about
twice,
it.
Twice, right?
Yeah, this is his third time. But on the other hand, he also ran a major criminal enterprise that is responsible for the deaths of thousands of people, innocent people. So
yeah, that's unfortunate.
That's the downside.
Yeah.
But it's still fun. But you know, it's hard. El Chapo is fun. I can't.
But what do you think of corporations, big companies? I don't know how big Lamborghini is, but you know, these Hummer and you know, all these companies that basically they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Those are ill-gotten gains, but they're like, hey, we don't care.
Like HSBC,
we're gonna sell our products there. So they're not held accountable. But they like the drug money. They want the drug business.
Yeah, there are major chemical companies, like I don't know if it's Dow or DuPont or whatever, who sell like incredible amounts of whatever I've forgotten the details of this, the kind of chemicals that go into processing cocaine. You know, they get the coca leaves, that's turned into cocaine. And they sell, you know, billions of dollars worth of this stuff to Latin American, you know, interests.
That's why this whole war on drugs is such horseshit.
Yeah.
It really is. It's just another scheme to criminalize a certain, you know, segment of the population and make money that way, control them. It's ridiculous.
And enrich other people who are.
Yeah.
So
security contractors.
Anyway, so that's El Chapo. Last question comes to us from Finland. Where's Finland? There it is.
Oh. So I'm gonna be in Norway in 2 weeks. Can't wait.
And Norway is, you know, two over from Finland.
Yeah.
But
to the left.
As usual, the question number five is a little lighter. And what is that question? A Finnish brewery recently introduced what noteworthy innovation? Was it A, a kit to produce homemade beer laced with THC? B, beer sold by the 1,000 pack? C, bottles of beer shaped like two naked people embracing? Or D, alcoholic beer labeled non-alcoholic to fool employers, spouses, and the police? Finnish music. Who doesn't love Finnish music?
Is this ABBA?
They're not Finnish.
I know.
Bjork? All right, so we have Steve says B, Dave says C. What is the correct answer? Irma, the correct answer is B, beer sold by the 1,000 pack.
I figured this game out.
Steve loves Weekly World News.
The best game ever. It used to suck, but now it's great.
Dave's like, I don't know. I'm not so fond of it myself. All right, so it's the Nokian Panimo Brewery, which has introduced a 1,000 pack of its Kesari beer. It was made available for purchase at Finland's K supermarket chain of stores. There it is, in case you're interested in shopping there. They insist that the 1,000-pack is not a joke, but is actually a response to rival brewer Karjala, which began offering 100 packs of beer. If you want to buy a 1,000-pack of Kaisari beer, you will need to bring roughly $2,346 with you, which works out about $2 a beer. So,
and a forklift. How are you going to get it home?
And a giant car, right?
I think maybe it is kind of a joke, but that's me, and that's Finland. And that's Weekly World News, and that's how we play. We're not even going to be able to have time to get to Totally True or Totally Bullshit because we dragged this out so far. So I have to save the questions that we have from Totally True or Totally Bullshit for you guys next week or next time. No, don't play me out. Don't you dare play me out. I'm like a Holocaust survivor. I don't get played off. So thanks for watching. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
And leave your comments below.
We're coming,
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Thanks to the city of Pittsburgh. We had a great time doing this. Happy Cinco de Mayo. Happy May the 4th be with you day, which is when we're actually taping this. I mean, as always, we like to tell you from here on the Friday Post Game, stay strong.